Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Deva Peter. Deva Peter trained and worked as a professional auto mechanic, welder, boat builder and custom car painter. He took sannyas in 1981 and was invited to the ranch where he custom painted Osho's famous Rolls Royces. I'm so happy to have Deva Peter on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Peter, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Excellent. So to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, like you said, in 81, I went to Pune to take sannyas, and I did. But I want to say that as my life goes on, I'm realizing that I've always been with Osho. And I had realized that at a certain time when I was at the ranch, that we were just real good buddies from previous lives. So coming to Osho and taking sannyas was just that way, just meeting an old friend.
I see. Okay. Would you like to tell us a little bit about the circumstances that brought you to India and how you heard first about Osho, maybe through sannyas, since you read a book or something like that?
Yeah, I had a friend who had been in Pune. I was in yoga with him previously in Chicago, and then he became a sannyasin, and he was in Pune a number of times, and he would communicate with me by letter, and then when he come back to the States, he was telling me all about Osho. But at that time, I wasn't interested in any more gurus because I had pretty much burned myself out on guru hunting. But we went to Gitam together, so through him, I was turned on to Osho, and of course a video of Osho at Gitam that I'd realized that I had to go to Pune to meet Osho and rekindle this old friendship that we had, so that's how it happened. Yeah.
I see. So you were kind of looking for a guru prior to Osho. So would you like to tell us briefly your journey there?
Well, I had spent many, many years traveling around, being what I call an ashram hopper, living out of my camper bus. So like I say, all of this stuff is written in the book, 93 Rolls Royces. But just to tell you a little bit about it, I was living on a river naked in Northern California as a breatharian. Like I say, being an ashram hopper, visiting other gurus and taking offers as such to be part of their organizations. But like I say, got all burnt out on that. And then when I finally did go to Pune, it was mainly because of Osho talking about Sōsan. Sōsan is the third Chinese patriarch of Zen, which Osho did a discourse on and wrote a book about the discourse, a series of discourses on Sōsan. And that was my actual understanding what my trip actually was Sōsan. And because Osho had talked on Sōsan, I wanted to meet Osho and get his understanding of Sōsan. So Sōsan was actually my connection to Bhagwan, to Osho.
Okay, that's great. So thank you for clarifying that. And of course, we don't want to give away too much because you recounted your story in this wonderful book, 93 Rolls Royces. And of course, we'll talk more about that. Back in episode 52, I interviewed Viramo, who ghostwrote the book for you, Osho's 93 Rolls Royces. And we spoke a little bit about that, but today I'd love to hear more directly from you because this is your story. So first of all, what was your job? What did you do for Osho's Rolls Royces?
Well, I when I first got to the ranch, I was, like you say, a welder, mechanic, and then one of the cars got dented, and they didn't really have an auto body person there, and that was my main trade. I had my shop in Ojai, California, when I went to Pune. So I went to fix the dent up at the garage, and when I was up there, another car that was parked next to the car I was working on got dented, and so one thing led to the other. And Osho asked me if I wanted to help out on the cars. But even before that, he asked me to help out on his speedboat and houseboat that he had there. And so one thing led to the other. When Osho found out that I told him that I could paint anything he ever could think of on a Rolls, his eyes lit up and he was like a child with a new toy. And so we got into this whole partnership of creating these different paint jobs and pictorials on the Rollses. And it was a fantastic opportunity to be able to sit with him and talk about all this work being done. So it was just a mind-blowing type of an experience. But that was my main job after the boat thing, was to paint the cars. And we had a full-blown operation going where I had some help. I had a sannyasin, stripping parts off the car and putting them back on, and another sannyasin up at the garage. This is Lao Tzu Garage compound, doing the detail work. And I had a Swami guy as my helper, actually doing the work on the cars. And so we had like a whole round robin of cars. At any given time, we had maybe 3 to 4 cars at different stages of the game happening. But Osho oversaw every job that was going to happen. I presented him with all kinds of ideas and paint samples. So he chose. He was like a child with a new toy. He chose all the paint schemes, the combinations of interior colors to whatever pictorial was going on the car. So it was this great collaboration of us sitting together and creating these works of art.
Okay, it sounds like a lot of fun, and it's interesting to hear how Osho was directly involved in the whole process. And I recently interviewed Shivananda, and he was talking about how Osho was involved with the books, and he was like the art director, and he would choose which picture goes where and how to put his name in which color and which font, etc., etc. It sounds like the way you described this, he was doing the same with the car. So he was directly involved in choosing with you the different combination, etc.
Yes, exactly. That's the way it happened.
Okay, great. So I've got a few like stupid questions, if you like. I've always been curious to know, and I think you are the best person to answer. So we know Osho had these 93 Rolls Royces. So were they all the same type of cars, or there were different models?
Yeah, they were pretty much the Silver Spur, which is the short wheelbase four-door that was very popular in the United States. He had tried other cars. He had I think 3 Camargs, which are two-door sporty jobs. And then there was a much smaller car, which I guess he allowed Vivek to drive around a little bit. But for the most part, it was these short wheelbase four-door Silver Spurs. The years, I guess, were 81 through 85. He had said that he really enjoyed the ride of those cars. And they were very quick, powerful cars. For a short while, I was on the ride. We call it the ride. It was where he would go out into the world towards Madras on the highways. And I was on the ride to help protect him. And we couldn't hardly even keep up with him because he was such a quick driver and very good driver. But I only did that for a little while. But I pretty much was always, had my nose to the grindstone in the spray booth or with him up in his room deciding on all these schemes and stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you about the passion of Osho for driving and driving fast, as you just said. But before that, just a quick one on how Osho chose the car to drive. So say he would go in the garage and there are 93 Rolls Royces. How would he choose, today I'm going to drive this car rather than the other one?
Well, he would never come down to the garage to do that. He would somehow choose a car to be brought up to him. And one of the cool things what he would do, when a new car would arrive, and he knew which cars were coming in by mail, I guess, or he knew which color schemes were coming. He knew which cars were coming. And so he enjoyed wanting to drive the new car right away, as soon as it came off the truck, basically. And we did a few modifications to the cars before we actually Swami Ovesh, his driver, would actually take the cars up to him, to his house, and he would get in that car there, up at the house. We did, a few modifications to the car, like we put a brake pedal extension, because he liked driving with both feet, and so his left foot would be applying the brake, and we needed a little extension that would allow him to touch that brake pedal with his left foot easier, and a few other little modifications like that. But other than that, which only took a few hours to do, and so he would choose a new car just as it would come in. And then, of course, when we would get done with a custom job, a custom painted job, he wanted to drive that custom painted car right away, so it didn't sit around at all. And luckily, we spent a lot of time making sure that car was free of fumes, which the cars are subjected to in a great quantity, but we did it in such a way that with a lot of plastic, basically plastic sheeting, and good detailing work by Swami Anandadas was in charge of detailing the car after it was painted, and then so it was brought up to him clear of any kind of fumes, which he was very sensitive to. And so anyway, the cars would be brought up to him, and then he would get in with Vivek or whoever was driving with him at the time, and then he would come down the road from the house through the gates of Lao Tzu, and then on to his greeting the sannyasins along the road, and then after that out into the world, into the highway, being chased by a chase car to protect him. And that was a very exciting time, challenging in many ways, because obviously there were so many threats of his life. Him being out there basically alone, basically, was very challenging, to say the least.
Yeah, I can imagine that. So fascinating to hear that Osho used to drive with two feet, like the right for the gas and the left for the brake. That's quite unique. First time I hear that. So it's a quite famous thing that Osho loved driving and driving fast. And as you mentioned, he was a bit of a reckless driver. And it's something of a miracle that he emerged from his driving adventure unscathed. So clearly he was not afraid of accidents or dying. Have you ever spoken to him about this peculiar passion, or what's your view on that?
Yeah, we used to talk about it all the time. And there was one cool story that happened when Anandadas was doing the chase car, and I wasn't there at the time, but he did his normal stop up in Madras to have his little bite to eat. And then when he departed from his little parking spot, he shot across a two-lane highway, and Anandadas couldn't get behind him quick enough, and he was almost ass-ended by a pickup truck that screeched to a halt, and that was very scary for Anandadas. And when we got back to the compound, we got a call that Osho wanted to see me and Avesh to talk about the incident. And so we went up there, and Osho was very concerned that Anandadas wasn't too freaked out by the episode. And I always wondered why he didn't actually ask for Anandadas to come up. But Anandadas, I guess, had issues with meeting Osho face to face or in close proximity like that. And so anyway, Vesham, he went up and Osho presented us with a bottle of wine to give to Ananda Das and proceeded to tell a story that actually happened many years earlier in India when he and his driver were out on the highway. Osho was not driving. He was in the back seat of this car, and the car went off the road and rolled onto its side, and the driver was totally screwed up with his thinking that he was dead. And Osho was saying, "Let's get out of the car, let's get out of the car, because I smell gasoline." And the driver was saying, I can't move, I'm dead. And Osho was saying, "Well, you're not dead, because if you were dead, you couldn't hear me." And so they got out of the car and everything was fine. And so Osho was telling us this story so we could pass it on to Ananda Das, saying that don't worry about me getting into an accident or anything, because if I would have died, I would have died then. So don't, you know, pass it on to Ananda Das not to be freaked out that Osho could have been ascended by this pickup. Don't worry, you know, that kind of thing.
Thank you for revealing us these intimate talks. So the other big thing about Osho Rolls-Royce is that, you know, it's like a symbol of power. So a staggering 93 Rolls-Royce were available to Osho, and that remains an enigma, in particular to the media. And even today, after more than 30 years, most of the articles about Osho refer to the Rolls-Royce. And much has been said about that, the reason why, you know, he had so many cars. So what's your take on it?
Well, my take is I don't have one, and I never did. I was only really interested in my communication with Osho and our Leela together, our dance of life together. And I never really thought why he was doing anything like that. But I did know that everything he did do was a device. It was a device to wake people up. And so I guess maybe looking back on it now, I just assume that obviously it was just another device to shake people up and to get to their consciousness and help them become more conscious. You know, obviously it has to do with materialism, to shake people up in you know, their quest, their desire, their attachment to materialism. So I think that was a very effective thing for him to do, which was just another one of his devices. But at the time, and even today, I don't really know. You know, I don't know. I never asked Osho what he was up to, and I didn't care. The only thing I was concerned about was our communication and our time together, which we enjoyed immensely, and to the point where it's almost hard to believe that actually that happened, that us being together, rejoicing, being in each other's company, actually happened. But it did, and obviously it's a memory that I will always consider to be grace, pure grace. For me.
So at some point before, you mentioned something about a sort of special relationship with Osho, as if you were old friends. I'd love to dig a little bit deeper, and if you would like to share a little bit more about that, and if you can explain what you mean with that.
Well, there's a lot to it, and I don't want listeners to think that I'm bragging or, you know, tripping out on any of this. But like I say, when we were old friends, I just actually look at it as karma, dharma. I was born into it. I was born into that, and I had basically nothing to do with it. I never quested to for any of this to happen. It just happened, the relationship, which is like Osho says, it's not like a real relationship. It's this master-disciple kind of thing, and we both realized and rejoiced in the fact that we were together before, and we were just having fun this time around, and there really wasn't any more to it than that. Just two good friends re-meeting again and having a big laugh about the whole thing, a big joke. And even though so much of what came down at the ranch in with the organization and, you know, everything, I wasn't really concerned. I still am not really concerned about any of that. Like I say, the only thing that I rejoice in was the fact that we were living the Lila together. Just that simple.
Beautiful. Yeah. And just for listener to know, Lila is a Hindi word that means play. And okay, so we have spoken about a lot about Wild Wild Country during past episodes with Sanyasin like yourself who live those events. And you just mentioned about, you know, some of the challenges during the life in the ranch. So how was life for you? I mean, you just mentioned that you were not concerned about things and you were just having fun enjoying this relationship with Osho, and you were, I'm sure, absorbed by your work in custom painting the royalties. But, you know, just want to hear if you had any sense of what was going on, and if you had any relationship or you had to deal with Sheila at any point.
Yeah, I would like to think that it was just fun and games and laughs, but it wasn't actually. The ranch situation was very intense, and even though I tried to remain aloof and, like I say, my nose to the grindstone with my work, I was drawn into conflict, and I was on the two kill list from Sheila and her group, and I knew it at the time. And my way in life, from my past life of being a samurai, kamikaze pilot, samurai type last lifetime, which I had lived with the Devagarbha there in the last lifetime, I knew I was clear of that. I you know, from regression therapy and whatnot, I knew of all that was happening. So when I was at the ranch in this type of life and death conflict with Sheila and her gang, I approached it as a samurai. And so I was subjected to a lot of intense energy. But to me, I was responding to it all as a samurai, and was up to the challenge. And that was one of the issues with me. And Osho was agreeing with me and helping me with that, to be that way, just like he would be helping all his sannyasins to be whatever way they needed to be. But that was my way. And so my challenges and confrontations with Sheila and Vidya and different Shanti B, you know, her gang was a challenge. But I was up to it. And when the ranch finally came to a close and everybody was more or less shocked about what had happened, I wasn't at all. I was up to it and knew it all along. Even when I first arrived at the ranch, I knew it, that my whole confrontation with Sheila was proper. So everything was proper for me there. And I would not say it was all fun and games, but it was certainly proper.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Coming back to your book, I'm aware that 100% profit from the sale of your book, titled 93 Roroises, again, will go to support the publication of Viha Connection. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about Viha Connection and how you are linked to it?
Well, we knew we actually stayed for a while at Viha, and we Danyam and Avinashu, we consider them friends. And so when Devagarbha and Varamo and his lovely wife Liberty got together with me with my stories to write the book, we just wanted to make a contribution to Viha, and so we chose to make the book not for profit, and so Viha, you know, is distributing it, and hopefully whatever amount they're charging, I don't know, will as a donation to them. And so that right from the get go, that was our plan, and everything how it all happened was like a group. You know, we had a group feeling and energy about the whole thing as it was being as I was telling my stories, and they were writing them and editing them, and that also was not that easy because, like I say, it was like a group. It brought out things in us that we were working on in ourselves. Like I know for myself, I have a very hard time talking about the past. I live in the moment, and the moment-to-moment awareness makes it somewhat difficult for me to go back and think about the past. But that wasn't my effort as part of the book to do that. And it all came together very nicely. And so we're still very much good friends with everybody concerned with the book. And some of the people are not sannyasins that helped us with the book. And so we're very pleased with how it all has happened.
Okay, wonderful. So where people can find your book if they want to get a copy of it? Is it available on Amazon or other channels or exclusively on Viha Connection?
Yeah, just exclusively. They should contact Viha.
Okay, wonderful. And I'll add the link to Viha Connection in the show notes so everyone can find your book there. So we are heading towards the end. And before I ask you three final questions, I just wanted to know if you have any project at the moment or, you know, what are you up to now?
Well, I have no projects now, and I never have since leaving the ranch. I dropped painting completely, and our biggest project is with our daughter and her three baby grandchildren, little girls. And so we're pretty much old fogies here in Colorado Mountains and living with her life. And we got all kinds of things maybe coming down here shortly, but no, I'm not involved in anything other than just like a bit of ranching and a lot of gardening and taking care of the house. And so I'm not actually related to painting or cars anymore.
Okay, sounds great to me. So the three final questions for you are, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, David Garber, we get up early. She gets up a lot earlier than me. I think maybe about 6. Not much happens, actually. We just have breakfast. And it's a very, very easy going life. She does spend a considerable amount of time checking out the weather and information on the internet. But I don't do hardly anything. I just get up, have breakfast, and wait for the next thing to happen. And she usually clues me in on what's happening. Like, I don't project like what I'm going to be doing for the day. I just play it moment to moment, where like she might say, oh, we're going to be going to the hot springs this morning, or we're going to go visit friends, or go to the doctor or something like that. But I just pretty much go. She has we have a little running joke that says she gives me an hour notice about the next thing that's I'm going to be doing in my life. And so that's the way it happens.
Okay, fair enough. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, I don't have a meditation. I don't meditate. I have become meditation, as they say. Moment-to-moment awareness is my meditation. It's the only thing that I've been doing probably for my whole life. Yes, I did participate in meditation groups, and we do go to meditation vipassana with different people once in a while. And we used to have a little center downstairs here years ago. That we used to do meditation, have a potluck, and see a video and Kundalini meditation. But since Hasio, our good friend Hasio, had died, we discontinued that. And but I would not say I'm a meditator. Actually, it's just moment to moment awareness, and it's been like that, I think, my whole life, actually. And so when I was doing the work on the cars, that was the same thing too. It was just moment to moment awareness, and that's just it.
Okay, so the last question is, you leave the OSH experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2019?
Well, we spend time in the evening, either listening to watching a video, or Avalon and me, we like Avalon. That's her AKA name. It's David Garba when we're talking Osho stuff. And we like listening to earlier tapes of his to go to bed, at the final go to bed. And that seems to suit us the best. But previous to that would be maybe watching some sort of movie or something like that. We don't actually do much, but we enjoy the early tapes, audio or video of his upon retiring. And that suits us just well.
Okay, wonderful. So we reached the end of the episode, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. And also, even though you mentioned that you prefer to live in the moment and it's been a bit of a challenge to go back into the past, but I think it's absolutely meaningful to capture your story, your testimony, and share those little details of Osho behind the scenes. And so I want to commend you for that. Thanks for putting the book together and sharing your story, and for being part of this podcast today.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. Lots of love, and bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.